Confessions of Alistair Crowley. John Burns performs dramatised extracts from the autobiography of Alistair Crowley. I have been asked many times about the dangers of magic, and indeed there are a great many dangers if magic is not practised by the learned and by those who have armed themselves with the sacred knowledge. For the most part, I have practiced magic with impunity. But I do recall one time when I was forced to fight for my very life. It must have been 1904, I think. I was returning from Cairo and visited Paris with Rose when I received an invitation from Gerald Kelly to meet him at a small cafe. The idea was that from there we would go to his studio and I would view his latest works. At that time, he was studying art in Paris, and the fame of later years had not yet befallen him. As soon as I walked into the cafe, I could see that something was wrong. Kelly was agitated. Without waiting for me to sit down, he greeted me at the door and drew me to a table, his hands trembling and his skin perspiring. Kelly told me of the fate of a young woman who was of our acquaintance. We will call her Miss Q. Kelly explained to me that she had fallen under the wiles of a Mrs. M, a sorceress, who I knew only by her evil reputation. Kelly explained that he had seen little by little the life force draining from Miss Q and asked if I would help her. It transpired that this sorceress was modelling a sphinx with the intention of one day endowing it with life so that it might carry out her evil wishes. I at once agreed, and we made our way to the house of Mrs. M a little way off. It was Miss Q who opened the door. I could see at once she was not the woman I had seen before. Her skin was pale, her eyes dull. She was listless and almost lifeless as she opened the door to us. I told Kelly he must wait outside, for I and I alone must face this sorceress. Miss M led me down a small dark corridor and into a drawing room. There, seated beside the fire, was Mrs. M. I knew at once that I was in grave danger. For seated in that chair with all the appearance of an innocent housewife was not only a sorceress, but a vampire. Miss Q left the room to fetch tea, I think, and then I was alone with the monster. The white magic and the black were left face to face. I feigned a calm and casual manner, for it is important in all occasions like this, when facing the onslaught of black magic, to appear indifferent to its purposes. On the mantelpiece, there was a bronze head of Balzac. I took it down, seated myself casually in a chair, and began to study it. It was then, almost without my noticing it, I realized I had begun to drift off into a dreamy state, and something velvet soft and soothing and withal lecherous moved across my hand. I looked up and saw that Mrs. M had noiselessly quitted her seat and was bending over me. Her hair was scattered in a mass of curls over her shoulders, and the tips of her finger were gently caressing the back of my hand. No longer was she the middle-aged woman worn with strange lusts, but now she was a young woman of the most bewitching beauty. Pale skin, red hair, green eyes. I realized at once that this was the power of her sorcery, and knowing this, I even so much as contemplated the Gorgon head. All the power of my magic would be petrified, and I would become a puppet in her hands. I arose, as though nothing untoward had happened, and replaced the bust upon the mantelpiece. I then engaged the monster in a magical conversation. That is to say, if you had observed us in that drawing room, you would perhaps not have known that the slightest thing was out of place, and yet a battle was taking place, a magical battle, with which I lacerated her evil heart and burnt into her black bowels as if each word was a drop of some corrosive acid. She writhed back, and then again approached me, even more beautiful than she had been before. Now she was fighting for her life, not just the blood of another victim. Hell yawned before her if she lost, the hell of lost beauty, of decrepitude, of wrinkles and fat. The odour of man seemed to fill her whole subtle form with a feline agility, with beauty irresistible. She took one step closer, and then sprang at me, and with a curse she sought to press her scarlet lips to mine. But I have studied magic too long to fall for such a ploy. I pushed her away, and held her at arm's length, and smote her thus with the current of her own evil, just as a would-be murderer is sometimes killed by the very weapon with which he has attacked his victim. A blue, greenish light seemed to play around the head of the vampire, and then the flaxen hair turned the colour of muddy snow, and the fur skin wrinkled, and those eyes, so many happy lives to stone, dulled, became as pewter, dappled with dregs of wine. The girl of 20 had gone. Before me stood a hag of 60, bent, decrepit, and debauched. With dribbling curses, she hobbled from the room. I left the house and again met with Kelly. I discussed with him what had taken place, and we were both agreed that Mrs. M was not working alone, and that behind her were forces far greater than hers. She was but the puppet of others. She was the slave that would catch the kids and the lambs that were to be served upon her master's table. So convinced was I that there were forces far darker than this woman behind what she was doing, that Kelly and I visited a clairvoyant in the midst of her ceremony. A voice entered the woman and bade me leave matters alone, which I did. Not yet was the cup full. All that was a long time ago now. But still, sometimes in my dreams, I see the green eyes of that beautiful vampire. And you can see John Burns in his play Alistair Crowley, A Passion for Evil, at the Edinburgh Fringe in August of this year.